So that's what sparked the client advisory services, to where this little department of bookkeepers evolved into consultants. They started really trying to analyze the numbers, and they started bringing in more analysts, some old-time CFOs, and they started developing this group that makes sure that clients are able to access controllers, CFOs, F&A services, so they can really help manage their business and maximize their profits.
Hello and welcome to the Gross Profit Podcast. My name is James Kennedy, CEO and co-founder at ProcurementExpress.com. We take the hassle out of managing SMB spend without buying an ERP, but we're not here to talk about that today. Instead, I've got Patrick Arnold from Elliott Davis to join me to talk about a number of different things, but specifically, we're going to be diving into what CAS is. It's something I had a term I hadn't heard before, client advisory services. We're going to talk about how a case study of how he managed to help turn around a business that was doing great, seemed to be a stratospheric success, but somehow had no distributions at the end of the quarter to give out. And then we're going to wrap it up chatting about PE, what's happening in PE, is the golden age of PE over? Patrick, thank you very much for coming on the show. Maybe you could just tell us a bit about you and where you are in the world.
Yes, James, thank you for having me. So, my name is Patrick Arnold. I work for a public accounting firm, which is headquarters in Greenville, South Carolina. We are a regional firm, but we work with companies across the world. We have a big international footprint as well. In my department there, we are the client advisory services. And I'm very excited to talk about what that means and the evolution of the accounting relationships. On a regular basis, we meet with owners, business owners, and their leadership teams to kind of help them understand their financial health and kind of project and forecast where we're going in the future. We also do the traditional bookkeeping stuff as well, but we also support the tax team. So it's a really evolution of the accounting and finance function in the public accounting space.
Right. So you're based in South Carolina, which I have to ask about. I've never been. In my mind, it's sort of an idyllic place with picket fences and beautiful weather all year round. But you had a client who ran a golf court business. Now, golf carts, where I am from, they get used on golf courses, but not always only the case in South Carolina. Is that right?
That is correct. Now, you do have them on golf courses there as well. But yes, in the state of South Carolina, they have a law where it allows people to drive golf carts on roads. Now, you can't go on the highways or the freeways by any means, but any other main roads you're able to drive a golf cart on, which is a very lucrative, you know, reason why the owner of this one case study we're going to talk about wanted to get into that business. It, you know, did not limit him to just country clubs. It allowed everyone to, you know, buy a golf cart. And there are some hills in South Carolina, so those golf carts do come in handy, you know, and especially they're big into their football between Clemson and South Carolina there. And golf carts are definitely used during the whole tailgating process. So a lot of fun with those.
Okay. So initially when you mentioned golf carts, I was like, well, how big can that business be? But it seems to be that you can, you know, a lot of people use these. They'll have a car and then they'll maybe for local errands around the place, they'll use them. So it's somewhere between a car and a buggy, I guess, is like, and that's why they're very popular.
Yes. Yes, and you get to customize them. And so that's where it gets a lot of fun. So not only do you just have the standard golf cart, but then you have maybe the nice wheels, you put a radio on there, you put a cooler in there, you paint it to a color scheme that you really like. So all of a sudden, you know, maybe a $2,000 golf cart can easily turn into a $15,000 golf cart, depending on all the accessories and then other parts you can do with it.
Hilarious. I'm middle-aged. Maybe I should be. It sounds perfect. It's like instead of having my Ferrari, I can move to South Carolina. I got myself a pimped out golf cart. I love the idea. I love the idea of people looking at one another going, oh, look at the rims on that. That's a cool golf cart you have there.
So yes, in our neighborhood, there is a competition going on because there's a local pool, community pool in the neighborhood, and they line them up next to each other and everyone compares and all the dads stand out there and they kind of, you know, admire what people are doing.
I love it. I love it. It's so middle class. So fantastic. Yeah. I'm totally speaking my language here. So you don't need a driving license to drive these things, is that right? And why has this taken off in the last number of years? Did COVID have something to do with this, or how come it's become so popular?
Yes, so you do have to register it with the state, but no, there's not really a driving permit, so to speak, really. I think you still need a driver's license to some extent, or someone has to have a driver's license. Right. It really took off during COVID, right, because we were all quarantined, you know, right. But in South Carolina in particular, they still did a bunch of outdoor community events. We still really try to come together. And right. During that time, we had to get A to B, and the golf cart was just an easier accessible thing where the kids can get loaded in and you can go from neighborhood to neighborhood or down the street or across the street to the farm where someone's having a bonfire that night. But, you know, and then down in the southern part of the state where there's some people who like to retire, there's golf cart communities and there's a lot of islands, a little tiny little islands down there as well, where it just makes sense to leave the car in the garage and you just take the cart down through the island from your house downtown and go down to the, you know, to the bar or the pub or go get some dinner with some people. And it just kind of took off from there. And then all of a sudden other states started adopting that same law. Now our partner, North Carolina, right next to us, does not allow you to do that. But I believe Georgia is now. So Georgia allows you to do that same thing. And so it just became popular as a good means of transportation.
Wow. You know, you just said pub there, and it just made me realize it's probably a lot safer, too. I mean, a golf cart, there's only so much damage you can do with a golf cart.
Yes.
I presume you still can't have drink and drive these things. Is that
correct? But yes, more than likely, yes. That's probably the choice of transportation if they are going to go out for a few beverages, you know, at the end of the day.
That's
your point. It's a little bit easier to get around.
Okay. So by the time your client came to you, he had picked up on this trend. Maybe tell us a bit about things. Seemed good, but he had a problem.
He did. And he had a great tax accountant that was really good with the tax code.
Right.
But that tax accountant was experienced and focused in what the tax impact of any decisions that were made.
Mm-hmm.
That individual did not put a lot of effort or time into understanding what the financial statements mean and how we can use the numbers and the results from the business and make good decisions as it pertained to his vision, right? And so to your point, this owner, you know, he retired from an industry where he did a lot of commercial garages. So kind of understood inventory quite well, understood right. working capital well. But, you know, so he pivoted to this because he wanted some extra money post-retirement, invested mm-hmm. into this, and it was operating well, but there weren't processes in place and there weren't systems and visuals and put in place to help manage the balance sheet and how cash flowed through the balance sheet side. And so we got the opportunity to work with him because we were focused, again, as a cash department, we were focused on what the numbers mean and how we can maximize our profitability throughout the organization.
Okay, so this is an experienced guy. It wasn't his first rodeo. I guess if you're listening to this, a lot of people I know run a business are like, I'm working so hard, I'm not seeing, you know, the dividends at the end of the day, what we call dividends in Europe or distributions. So it's a common theme. And this is, you know, he's obviously experienced in business because he invested quite a significant amount to get this going in the first place. How did the conversation, because he was just, you know, his tax accountant was obviously doing the job. Did they give you an introduction to you? How did you get in touch or how did you understand that you would be able to help him?
You know, so another person in our firm knew him and had the conversation with him, you know, out at a social event, and they were introduced to us. And then we started getting involved to help out with, we started with the bookkeeping, and then we moved quickly into the financial reporting and more of that fractional CFO position. And that evolved. And one thing, you know, that they did not deploy was budgets throughout their organization, and they didn't educate their key stakeholders on how to manage the working capital side. And so that's kind of talking through that and listening to his pain points of, hey, I've invested this amount of money into it. I expect this amount back per quarter, but we're nowhere close. Like, I'm kind of retired. I don't really want to dive into this as much, you know, what's going on. And so they gave us that opportunity to step in and kind of really help the team understand the flow of cash.
Okay. So I guess this is a good time to mention that you were referred because you run this client advisory services. So it's a term I hadn't heard before. It sounds like some kind of fractional CFO services. How would you describe it?
Yep. So, you know, essentially you had public accounting, right? And you have a bunch of, you know, like CPAs that did a lot of tax and audit work. And there was a sub segment of that called just bookkeeping, right? And that group would help the tax team get the financials done so they can do the tax return. Well, all of a sudden over the years, over the last 20 years or so, clients would ask like, hey, what do you think about my financials? What's happening? And so that's what sparked the client advisory services to where this little department of bookkeepers evolved into consultants. They started really trying to analyze the numbers and they started bringing in more analysts, some old-time CFOs, and they started developing this group that makes sure that clients are able to access, you know, controllers, CFOs, FP&A services so they can really help manage their business and maximize their profits, right? Because every business owner, James, as you know, when they get into it, they want to make money, right? They want to help their community. They want to make money. They're solving a problem, right? But it's very hard to do sometimes, right? When you don't have good financial clarity at the right time. And so client advisory services, it started evolving over the last decade or so, or two decades. And what they do is we do a lot of modeling, budgeting. We look at risk management. We do tax advisory. So we work with tax teams and help the advisories side of that. We do operational improvement, right? We talk through leaders and we think about the operations, how things are flowing, and we work through that whole business system. And so now when you have an owner, if you're an owner here listening, you know, you think about, you have a team of advisors that you listen to, your attorney, maybe your partner, your banker, and then now the accountant should be up there on a regular basis. You know, maybe your wife or husband, depending if they're involved too, because that's always, you know, how a lot of business starts. So all of a sudden now this department moved into that advisory role.
Right. And so your disc client came to you and they were like, listen, I'm working, there's no money. But did he have like a goal set out, or was he how did he brief you? It was just like, this is a pain and don't seem to be making any money. Did he want to get out of it? Did he want to put someone else in there? Did he have a dollar amount that he was aiming for? What was his brief to you?
Yeah, he was expecting roughly $1 million back a year in profit, right? I mean, this business was north of $7 million a year, right? So he was expecting at bare minimum, at least a distribution of $1 million per year. When we got involved, he was about 3 years old at that time, and he has yet to take a distribution. And so working through why, it was a great exercise, and we eventually found the answer.
Right. And just pause there for a second. I mean, north of 7 million in 3 years is incredible, right? It's an amazing start. So it's very disappointing not to be able to have anything at the end of that. But he had a very clear goal. And I don't know if this is your experience, but I think a lot of people just don't have that goal. Like they haven't even set that. They're just sort of working, they're getting up, going to go to work on their business, come back, and they don't really know where they're going. And even though within their business, they might have all sorts of targets and quarterly goals and whatever for their team, they haven't done the same thing for the ownership of their own business and really, you know, hold themselves accountable to that. So this guy was at least ahead of the mark in that way. So let's get into... All right. So the blocking and tackling then, you clear what you needed to do, help this guy get to his six-figure dividend, or seven-figure dividend, I guess. Yep. So what happened next?
Well, James, that's what, one step back, your point there exactly. And that's one of about the owners understanding what their goals are. They do a wonderful job for the business. If there's anyone, you know, listening to this that needs some advice, the first step I would take is understand what your personal goal is and what your 3, 5, 10-year vision is. So I just want to add that in. That's super important because you have to do it for yourself and do it for the business. And if those two don't align, you got to figure out why, without a doubt. So going back to your point there, yes, he had a vision. He knew what he wants. But the issue was that they had this working capital problem. And what that was is essentially the team that was buying was not really diving into what inventory was and how inventory was turning over. They were kind of just buying what they saw was empty on the shelf at the time and not really working with the sales team of what is selling, what we need to stock up on. And all of a sudden there's some disconnect there.
So his profit was actually there. It was just sitting on a shelf somewhere instead of in his bank account.
Exactly. And they used Lightspeed, you know, to kind of as their POS that does some tracking, you know, from a procurement's perspective, right? But understanding what the metrics meant, understanding how things went through, because no system's perfect. We know this, right? You know, when it comes to procurement, like that system in particular had an issue with certain purchase orders. So all that said, yes, you're right. The profit was sitting on the shelf because that team didn't know how to analyze it.
Huh. Okay. Well, Lightspeed is a great company. I won't dig into that too much because they compete with us, but and I don't want to we'll go into the. But I guess that the what I'm also getting from this is not a naive business here. He had systems in place. He had his purchase orders in place. He obviously learned things from his previous business. And then you were like a kid at Christmas time. You were even walking in when you were. How long did it take you to realize what was going on? What were the signs you saw first, and you realized, hold on, there's an opportunity here.
Yep. So the first thing we looked at is I wanted to see how fast inventory was turning over, right? So
right.
We first looked at, you know, gross profit per segment. You know, we realigned his chart of accounts to make sure that the revenue aligned with his segments of his business. And then we went down to the cost of goods sold and realigned that to make sure it aligned with the revenue side. Because before they didn't have that. It was kind of broken up. It was kind of combined. So it was really hard to understand what your gross profit per segment was at that. Once that was kind of quickly done, we jumped over to how fast is inventory turning and what categories are turning. And we started seeing some stalling, but we kept seeing purchasing. So we saw one inventory line actually keep growing, essentially. And it was like, well, wait a minute, why is this growing when sales isn't growing for this segment, right? And so we dove right into that and we kind of started establishing a better ordering process for all of the inventory they need to make these carts as beautiful as they are.
Very interesting. So maybe we'll just go over the highlight of what the different segments of this business that had to be broken out. I mean, you have the physical golf carts. That's one, I'm guessing they sell those. What are the other segments?
Yep. So you have the new carts, right? So you have a new cart sale. So that's just a blanket cart, bare bones, and you get to soup that up. They also had used carts so that they would get used carts that they could have because they had a rental fleet. And then after a certain amount of time, they are allowed to sell those. And so those were considered used carts. So that was another segment. And then you have aftermarket parts and accessories. And so different accessories for cup holders, you know, looking at cup holders, the radios and the coolers and all that stuff goes into there. Then you have your OEM parts and accessories, which are going to be a little bit more of your outside, you know, vendor, like our, you know, spoilers and everything else that you can put, bumper guards and everything
spoiler.
Else.
Spoiler, love it.
Yeah. And then we had batteries and then wheels and tires, of course, right? Like we had, you know, the rims were a big deal. So those were the main segments overall.
Okay. And I'm just, this is fantastic. Spoilers on my golf course. It's a whole world. I'm like, yeah. I'm not even at the races here. I didn't even know what I was missing. Okay, so tell me about then this interesting. So there was stuff on the shelves, and that was because it sounds like the operations team were just reordering when the shelf got empty. And what changed? How did you change that process before they started reordering items?
So we used a software called Fathom. We overlaid it. So they were in QuickBooks Online, and we used a software from UK-based called Fathom, and we put that on top of the financial statements. So we brought the financial statements in. We trended out some financials. But then Fathom also allows us to bring in what we call non-financial metrics, non-financial KPIs. So we were able to pull information out of Lightspeed, and we were able to put quantities, and we were able to trend out the number of quantities by those cost segments. And as we put that all into one report, in one simple report where we could talk about not only the financials, but the drivers to those financials as well, in that we were able to quickly identify, hey, these parts aren't turning. You know, that we can literally go down each, you know, SKU and determine what is turning, what's not turning, and why. We started having those questions. And then all of a sudden we learned that the back office team was not getting the information they needed from the front office team. And the front office team was saying, hey, the demand is going down for this. This is, everyone's used this. Everyone has this kind of view. They want something different, right? And so that communication was not happening between the teams.
Huh. Interesting. Because you don't think about the sales team, really, they just worry about stockouts, I guess, and they're like, we want to avoid that at all costs, and I don't really care. As long as I'm going to, there's stock there for me to get my commission on, they're not going to worry too much about over-ordering. It's not part of their KPI.
Exactly. But when it's starting to affect distributions, it's everybody's KPI at that point, right? When the owners aren't getting their return, all of a sudden we have a bigger problem. And so again, customizing, right? Like you think about it, if you and I have a car, you and I probably don't want to get the same exact, you know, part. We want to be a little different, right? We want to have our own individuality with those. And so just kind of identifying through that allowed us to really start saving cash and stop spending as much.
Okay. So it's like saying, you know, you can't sell the same dress to two ladies going to the same ball, like same idea. You got to.
We're not gonna wear the same dress. You're right. We don't want to. Yeah, we need to have something slightly different.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Okay. So Fathom is very interesting. I mean, this is a great success story, and then you get to the stage where you've done your projections, as I understand it, with and I guess that makes real the alternate paths ahead of them, right? You know, what you're doing now versus what could be, which is a powerful tool for influence, I guess, really, in the organization. And do you use that to develop budgets for them, or was this something that the owner was just kind of eyeballing and made a few process changes on?
At first he was eyeballing it, right? So at first, you know, he was doing more of an eyeball and it wasn't going the way we wanted it, of course.
Right.
And then as we identified the problem and we wanted to create guardrails in which the organization had to operate. And that's where the budget and the forecasting using Fathom really helped us build that pathway for people to be able to operate and make sure they stayed within those guardrails. So we didn't have over ordering. Everything was going to exactly how it needed to go to make sure distributions were being paid out on a quarterly basis. So we identified that pretty quickly. We got the budgets in place. We got the guardrails in place. And I would say within 6 months, we started having quarterly distributions again. Yes. So okay. We are able to get there very quickly.
And when the budget is developed, was that managed by the owner centrally, or did he delegate that to the department heads saying, hey, okay, this, you know, you got to run this department for that amount? What was the approach?
He empowered his teammates to be able to do those budgets with our assistance. So we came in and we worked with each department and determined, right, hey, this is what we're seeing, this is what we're hearing, and this is what the sales is showing us. So we worked with them to kind of find the drivers of those budgets, and then we built them out for them, came back to the department head, said, hey, does this make sense? Is this what you know? This is what works. And then the final ownership did the stamp of approval. He was big about empowering his people, so that's why he didn't have a huge say in it.
Cool. So is he properly retired for the second time now, or is he still hands on?
Everything is moving very well. Yes, everything is going great for him at this time.
Very good. All right, seven figures of distributions. That sounds good to me.
That's not a bad year, is it?
So. Yeah. Great. Okay. So I'm going to ask you my classic question about a business hero at the end. But before we get to that, just tell us a bit about how can people get in touch with you or any of the resources that maybe people listening to this are ringing some bells with them they could get to.
Yeah. So, I mean, if everyone already has like an accounting software already in their cloud base, you know, definitely check out Fathom if they want more complex reporting and more forward looking stuff. It's a very easy add-on, I'll say. And there's other ones out there too that do the same thing. So find one that really speaks to you. But I would definitely look at that. If you want to reach out to me, I mean, my email is, you know, my name, Patrick.Arnold@ElliottDavis, and that's ELLIOTT and then DAVIS.com. Reach out to me at any time. Love to have a conversation about this. I love hearing business owners and hearing business owners' issues and what they're going through. And I love strategizing and talking through the hurdles that everyone faces. That's the best way.
Great. Okay. And I guess you're hands-on with your clients. Like you work directly on projects yourself. So you're dealing with the organ grinder here.
Yes. I mean, I'm pretty hands-on, I would say. We've developed a great team below us that have really stood up into this advisory role. So we've taken really strong accountants, really technically sound accountants from even the audit teams and helped them become more advisory. So we have a phenomenal team, but yes, I'm in the weeds still. Hard to get me out. I really enjoy being in the weeds and understanding the problems and trying to solve them.
Yeah, well, I think people really appreciate that, you know, like because they want to build a relationship with someone, and it's fun, like to be able to see that impact that you're making yourself.
And you're right. It's about the relationship, James. You're exactly right, and I think that's the big thing when we start rethinking our accounting function is what relationship do I have with my accountant? You know, is that person able to give me what I need? If not, I need to find an outside role for that, right? That's the key is the relationship of this.
So, Patrick, I'd like to I have the same question I ask everyone at the end of the podcast, which is, you know, who's your business hero and why?
So as cliche as it might be, my business hero is my father. And, you know, reason being is my father, you know, was in the banking industry, you know, essentially from the 70s. And then eventually started working for a private equity group that consolidated the banks in the late 80s, 90s, early 2000s mm-hmm. for that first run of that consolidation process. And work, he taught me so much, you know, growing up. One, just I got to see what he went through. But after I got out of school and became an accountant, he was a great influence on me and teaching me how to, hey, you know, yes, you can focus on the P&L and focus on EBITDA, and that's great, but you got to come to the balance sheet side. And you got to understand if you want to grow, it's all through the balance sheet.
Yeah, I have learned this, that accountants love balance sheets. And when we do our quarterly meeting, I have an accountant on the board here, and we always have this pause where we're like, okay, now, let's let Ronan talk about the balance sheet for a while. We wait for him to finish, and we're like, okay, now we move on. We don't really understand it. But, okay, cool. But now PE is interesting. So your father was obviously a pioneer at this stage. Like PE is a relatively new industry, you know, late 70s, early 80s. You must have been one of the early ones. And there's a, you know, I've heard some people saying that, you know, back then it was kind of easier because, you know, business owners didn't realize what they had in a lot of cases, and there was a lot of opportunity. It was easy to find, you know, these businesses that, you know, you could do an LBO on, for example, or you could use leverage in some other way. But today it's way harder because people are more educated, maybe, or maybe they have higher expectations, etc. What's your take on the PE landscape, how it's changed up to now?
Yep. So I agree exactly what you said. They have gotten much smarter. You know, there's the arbitrage is not really as much as a plan as it where to they want successful businesses, right? Mm. They want to be able to find groups that are going to generate profit and have key players in place to help the operations from that perspective. Mm. They've gotten much smarter. You know, I think in you know, the United States, recently, they're sitting on a bunch of dry powder waiting to find the deals that make the most sense for them. Yeah. So they're definitely tightened up from that perspective of very selective in where they're getting involved with. And obviously regulation always comes into play with that. You know, for instance, the healthcare space, there's some regulation that's trying to prevent PE to get involved with certain hospital systems and so forth. On the other side, you have dental, which has been PE heavy for the past six years, where, you know, it's being consolidated on a regular basis.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, we need, maybe, you know, the environment is changing now at the end of 2024, 2025. Mm-hmm. So maybe things are going to change a little bit. Certainly regulation has had a dampening impact as yes. we've seen it, you know, and it's not even at a SMB level, but you can see what's happening at the higher level with the big tech companies have been inhibited in a lot of M&A activity, and that all trickles down. It just sets the mood music against this sort of thing. So let's see what happens. Patrick, this has been a lot of fun. Thank you very much for coming on the show. I love the fact that you educated me on the world of golf carts and the balance sheet at the same time. So that was a unique take. Thank you very much for coming on the show. If you're still listening, thank you for listening to the show. If you are a fractional CFO and you're interested in finding out about how Procurement Express can help work with your clients to deliver budgets on time, hold people accountable for what they're supposed to spend, you can go to procurementexpress.com/partners and sign up there, where I have a webinar and I'll explain just from a fractional CFO perspective what we do and how we help. Patrick, thank you very much.
Thank you so much, James. It's great being here.